Montana healthcare workers recently organized a pretty well-attended statewide rally in opposition to the CMS vaccine mandate. And they welcomed the news recently that a judge put a halt to that mandate in Montana, but also across the entire nation. But what's the rub? Why are healthcare workers standing up against the mandate, jeopardizing their jobs and their relationships? Registered nurse and Big Sky Liberty Alliance spokesperson Corinne Hammond joins us to discuss. And then, housing in Montana. Going to talk with State Representative Lou Jones, who chairs an interim study committee that's looking into some of the reasons why we have a housing crunch and what actions can be taken to help ease the pain. I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. We'd appreciate if you'd like to subscribe and get regular updates, as not every show that we do live on the radio does make a podcast. And also, we'd love to hear from you. Please feel free to contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com for comments or insight or show suggestions or a good joke every now and again. We'd appreciate that too. Here's Corinne Hammond and also later on, State Representative Lou Jones. First, let's welcome Corinne Hammond. She is a registered nurse. She's a spokesperson for Big Sky Liberty Alliance. We had her on the program on Friday, a group in Great Falls, still farming and ranching out there, and also probably, and good morning, Corinne. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Tom?
I'm good. Thank you for being here again. First, let's talk about the rally, and then we want to ask some questions, too. I know because people say, why are healthcare workers anti-vaccine? And I think you've been able to respond to that. But the rally in 10 states across Montana was pretty well attended. What's your reaction?
We were straight up floored and so excited. It was an amazing turnout across all of Montana and all the locations, even the smaller towns. And it was a really positive energy. We had a ton of people that went by, honked, gave us thumbs up, yells out the window for us. We had a fire truck that went by and honked for us. Just a ton of positive energy. There's always a little bit of negative, but overwhelmingly, it was a very kind of healing, for a lot of nurses because of the feeling of being kind of in this alone. And so to have such a positive response was so encouraging for so many.
Did you pick up in talking with some of the folks that they shared a lot of the same things, or were there some new concerns, or you know what stood out as you're gathering and you and your team as you're gathering this reaction from the public? Because like you said, you probably felt you're in it alone in a lot of ways, and of course there's a lot of there's a bit of risk of being a healthcare worker, mm-hmm. and putting yourself out there in that regard. What were some of the interesting takeaways?
I feel like mostly people, like it was very eye-opening to realize there was so much support. I think it was eye-opening for people who drove by to see a bunch of healthcare workers out there holding signs saying, please stop the mandates. And so I think on both sides, it brought a lot of awareness, which is exactly what we wanted to do. And we just wanted to bring people together in a way that was positive and spoke volumes. And that's what we did. And it was very reassuring for many.
Of course, reassuring as well because of news yesterday that a U.S. District mm-hmm. Court judge out of Louisiana put a stay, injuncted the mandate, and was to take effect. Well, the CMS mandate and then the federal worker mandate. I mean, this mandate has been attacked in three different courts in a lot of ways. But obviously, you had to receive the one that affects Montana and a dozen other states because this deadline was upcoming. You had to receive that pretty well.
Yeah. So when it broke yesterday, I was at work and went running around to all of the nurses who I knew have been in the same position that I have been in, and there were tears and there was lots of smiles, and yes, it was very well received. And that mandate, actually, they felt, I read a breakdown on the ruling this morning, and they basically annihilated the CMS ruling, which was very gratifying to read. And they also said that all 50 states have healthcare workers that need to be protected. And so they made a blanket stay for the entire nation, not just the two. I mean, there's two lawsuits against this. Each of them had 10 states, but the one that was done in the Louisiana court that passed yesterday that included Montana was a blanket coverage for all 50 states to knock down this mandate for all health care workers.
And it's interesting, too, that all three of those courts have said that CMS and OSHA does not have this authority. I mean, it came flat out and said that. I know these cases are not determined yet. What do you think happens next?
Well, it still has to go to court. This is just a stay for now, but it's a very positive step, and it's not the first step. There's been a couple other steps. So we're all very optimistic that this will go to court. It will be a positive outcome. It may go to the Supreme Court, but we're hopeful that that will also be a positive outcome because it's truly an overreach, and they are taking away the powers of, you know, we checks and balances, basically, and they are giving it to one single authority, and that's not a safe way to run a country. That's not a republic. That's something else. So,
I don't want to say where you work specifically, and as much as you can discuss without, you know, risking anything further, but how has hospital administration addressed this, or have they addressed this? I know the ruling came out yesterday. Maybe they're probably putting that wording together now.
Yeah, we have heard from two hospitals in Montana that I know of. The rest of them, we haven't seen anything from yet. They're probably, you know, putting that together. One of the communications was fairly disappointing in that it spoke that they still want people to put in their religious exemptions. They encourage us to continue on. They're not going to take action against jobs, more or less, on December 5th, but they encourage us to continue on as we've been doing because the mandates may be reinstated, which is disappointing for healthcare workers to hear because it's been a very tumultuous and emotional time. And you would think that maybe there'd be some semblance of an apology or some sort of encouragement that there would be, you know, enforcement of no segregation, no discrimination, because many nurses and other healthcare workers are semi-scarred. I mean, the damage has already been done because of the treatment that's been endured in some of these places. And so it's pretty disheartening for many nurses to hear that come out. So I hope hospitals can back their employees. You know, it takes all of us to do this and to care for our communities. And if they can't back us, and if they only allow the money to speak, then it is disheartening to work in this field and have it be about that instead of what it's really about.
Well, and then along that end, Corinne Hammond is with us, spokesperson for Big Sky Liberty Alliance. It was a group of healthcare workers that formed to fight the mandates, the CMS mandates, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Rock in a hard place for the hospital administrators and healthcare providers as well. Why don't you take the vaccine? Why? And some people would say you're a registered nurse. You're in this profession because you have a caring and giving nature. That's a general statement, but I believe a lot of people would accept that. Given that nature, why don't you take this vaccine to protect those that you care about?
So per the FDA and the vaccine creators, the vaccine doesn't slow transmission. So my personal choice to not take the vaccine should be my personal choice because there is risk involved with getting the vaccine. There's risk involved with getting COVID too. I don't deny that. But where there's risk involved, we need to be allowed to choose which risks we want to take. I've had COVID. I have antibodies. That is not even a consideration. My body has already built up a system to protect me against this. Why must I also take on the risk of injecting something into my body that also has very big risks, including death, myocarditis, blood clots? I mean, the list is very long, and there's many cases of it, probably very underreported cases also.
Well, and that's a whole part of this thing, too. The transparency behind it all has been lacking in a lot of ways. And so this creates this situation that we find ourselves in with some resistance to the vaccination. What about the healthcare workers who you work with who possibly feel threatened by you? Or perhaps they're a little bit, they resent the fact that they took the vaccination. Maybe it was against their better judgment, but they did it to protect their jobs. You know, I'm sure, as you said, it's a very emotional time. What do you tell them?
Mm-hmm. We're here for you. Basically, every day I hear of more nurses that have gotten one or two or three jabs and they want nothing more to do with it, or they've had side effects that they're dealing with now. And I think they're probably, the numbers in that group will grow, and they are more than welcome to join us. We're here for them. And I think more and more people just keep waking up to what's happening. And it's not about us versus them at all. We just want people to be able to make the choice on what they put into their body or in the risks that they have to take in order to continue working at a job that they were called to do.
Yeah. And a fully informed choice too.
Yes.
That's what concerns me. You're going to continue this action. What comes next in terms of educating the public, or as you guys did this last weekend on Sunday, rally?
So we are, as a group, deciding to stay very vigilant on this. Many of us feel like our eyes have been opened to some pretty concerning things that have been going on. And because of our inaction and our complacency or unwillingness to be involved in things, things have slipped this far. And so many of us feel that we are ready to continue being vigilant on this front and other fronts, because what's happening is kind of, you know, this is just one piece of the puzzle. There's a large puzzle out there, and we're awake to it now.
Real quickly, next event is what?
Dr. Artis, we're flying him in from Texas. He's a doctor who...
When and where? We're going to run out of time, Corinne.
Sure. December 13th, we're going to have it at Petro Hall. Doors open at 6:30. And show starts at 7.
Look for more information, Big Sky Liberty Alliance, if you're interested. Thank you, Corinne. Take care.
Yep, thank you.
When you see railroad tracks in your community, you're looking at a partnership lasting 170 years. BNSF Railway has cared about your community for generations. BNSF continually invests in equipment and technology to keep our employees and communities safe. Help keep your family and neighbors safe. Remember to stay alert when you are near the railroad tracks and to only cross the railway at designated crossings. Let's keep each other safe, and let's keep the economy moving for the next generation. This is BNSF.
Tom Schultz back again here on Voices of Montana. Let's just get into this, welcoming State Representative Lou Jones. He is out of House District 18. That's Conrad, North, Shelby, all the way to the border, a Highline rep. And he's been in state government for a number of years and served on a number of different committees. I think a lot of them past chair of the Appropriations Committee. Knows his stuff, that's for sure. Good morning, Lou. How you doing?
Doing well this morning, sir. Doing well.
Thank you for joining us, too. And I know you've been in meetings there. Wanted to talk about, because you're chair of the Financial Modernization and Risk Analysis Study Committee, and that probably, looks at a ton of different things here. But there was a presentation recently to that committee as you guys are looking at how Montana can perhaps take some action to ease our housing pains. Give us an update. What's your immediate takeaway?
Well, you always have to address the source of the problem. And the source of the problem is simply that from 2010 to 2020, Montana increased in population by 10%. Housing units only increased 7%. And meanwhile, the number of folks from household in the 40s, it was 3.7, we're down to 2.5. So what we have is fewer people per house, bigger houses, and a ton more population. In particular, COVID added a bunch of folks moving in. So simply, we have a supply side problem. We've got massive demand for houses, and not a lot of people live per house anymore. So that's what's driving the system. That's what's driving the problem.
And do we risk then overreacting? I've said earlier, I think folks, especially in different communities, have looked at trying to solve the housing issue. And I don't know that we've really taken major steps forward. You look at it being, again, a supply and demand thing. That's the majority of it. It affects a lot of different things, though, like the labor market, consumerism, You know, interest rates has a part in this. Obviously, it affects homelessness and services for the less fortunate in that regard. So I guess the question is, what actions the legislature can take that deal with a supply and demand issue, but also kind of take maybe some action against the result of a lack of supply?
Yeah, well, so first we have to look at the reason that supply is limited. Why are houses not being built in this price range? Why are affordable houses not being built? And the best way to do this is to look at what's happening in states that have more successfully addressed it than us. This is maybe a new problem to Montana or newer problem, but it's been elsewhere for a long time. So what this report did, it was a research study, and it looked at other states and what worked, what didn't work. And effectively, we have a supply-side restraints. A lot of zoning, local zoning, in particular in communities such as Bozeman, require large lot sizes. They force only single units per lot. They prohibit duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. They strict parking requirements. They ban apartments or what they call those little additional housing units, right? The apartment in the basement, the apartment above the garage, the little apartment attached to your house. So we have effectively folks that control existing housing often pass rules that limit affordable housing. The zoning often limits out manufactured homes, even though the new manufactured homes, usually about $100,000 in cost, are often almost indistinguishable from a stick-built house. So we have, from local zoning rules in Montana, in particular in some of these intense areas, that make it uneconomical for builders to build affordable housing. You know, the most affordable housing of all are duplexes to fourplexes, but a whole lot of areas, these are zoned out. And so we have what is often a local zoning problem. And so the question is, will local control address this? Or what some states have done, you know, Oregon, for example, says that the property rights, by right, you can build fourplexes in cities and triplexes or duplexes in towns. They say you can split lots by right. That was their solution. Utah said you can build those additional dwelling units by right. Nebraska, and that'd be more inclined to what I would see a Montana doing, said, hey, look, the state's going to come up with a menu of options that locals can to help with housing, these by right rules, and that the local can choose from, or they can do some on their own. But if we want to enhance the supply of affordable housing, we're going to have to address why people aren't building them today. It's a supply side problem. It truly is.
And I want to come back after a break there, too, and talk more about that, the supply side, because it seems like supply and demand is something that we understand on a relatively pretty good label or level. And I wonder if we try to create short-term solutions that deal with some of these problems that might hamper the long-term outlook. Also want to look, and going off of what you had just talked about, are local governments responding then correctly? Or at least, I don't know, let's just leave it at that. Are they responding to this in ways that are going to help the issue? We're back with more after some headlines. Representative Lou Jones, House District 18, with us here today on Voices.
Open enrollment for healthcare.gov is here. If you're an insured or have a job that doesn't offer insurance, check out healthcare.gov. Due to a new law, prices are lower and more people qualify. Now, 4 out of 5 customers pay just $10 a month or less with financial help. It's easier than ever to find the right plan for you. And millions of Americans, just like you, have already enrolled. New law, lower prices, more people qualify. Sign up at healthcare.gov by December 15th.
Lou Jones is with us, State Representative, House District 18. And before I run out of time again in this next segment, Lou, let's just talk about our local governments responding. And then are they responding correctly? Because if this is a transitory sort of nature, you know, we got long-term and short-term solutions. You can maybe risk creating a short-term solution that hampers long-term progress.
So local governments will often face a different challenge, right? Once a neighborhood builds out or begins to build out, the folks that have houses often want strict requirements on whether they're single or multifamily homes next to them. So if you own a lot next to me, I'll often lobby government to have a property right that says you can't build a duplex or a triplex or a fourplex, because I would prefer not to have one next to me. And a lot of governments allow that. Or if you have a stick-built home, you'll argue that you don't want a manufactured home in the area for any variety of reasons. And so local governments often struggle with don't build it in my backyard. So yeah, they have some responsibility in the problem. If you take a look at the Bozeman I went to college in, there was all sorts of additional dwelling units and manufactured home parks, and you've seen a whole lot of different items that you can see today. It's hard to suggest that we're going to build affordable housing units if we zone them out and make there so there's nowhere to build them. And so, yeah, they have some responsibility and they can make some choices, but these choices are often difficult. Now, they'll often reach in and they'll touch a certain choice. We have short-term rentals, the Airbnbs, and they'll say, okay, well, you can't rent weekly anymore or daily, only monthly, which does create about a 2% improvement. It's not significant, much less so than I would have thought, but there's some recent stats out on that. But it has a short-term benefit of slightly lower rents and more availability, but it has a long-term cost as you become a community that outside investment doesn't look at as favorably, you know, because they want to, you again, you're messing with government when it plays in the middle. And it's the only way you can prevent somebody from building something is go get government to say you can't. And often we zone out affordable housing. That's simply the truth. We as a state have tried to do some of the bigger units. We've tried to, you know, do some low interest, do some gap financing. You know, government can't build housing. That just doesn't work. Government can't successfully do much of anything, but it can sometimes incentivize or encourage the building of units. We could also take a look at policies, rules that said, hey, look, if you're in one of these areas that has all these challenges, then maybe you need to look at doing something with your zoning, your speed of response, how quick people can do these items. And if you don't do it at a local level, we could always say, well, the individual property right, the owner of that lot has enhanced rights. You can't prevent them from building a duplex or a threeplex or a fourplex or an additional dwelling unit, a little attached above, below, or alongside unit that they can rent out. But we have to address the supply side, right? It does absolutely nothing to pour money down the demand side.
Back with more here, State Representative Lou Jones, tackling housing in Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Scam artists are targeting electric cooperative customers from Missoula to Medicine Lake. Members have reported receiving calls of bills being past due and that power will be shut off unless an immediate payment is made. If you receive such a call, ask for the person's name and tell them you'll call them back at the cooperative office number. Never give out your account information. Your co-op will already have that on hand. A message from your Montana Electric Cooperatives. They do more than keep the lights on for you.
Lou Jones is with us as we're looking at our housing difficulties in the state of Montana. He's a long-serving state legislator right now, currently House District 18 representative, also chairs a committee that is most recently now, and the name of the committee is the Financial Modernization and Risk Analysis Study Committee. And Representative Jones, that's a pretty long title, actually. You chair that committee. It seems like there ain't nothing that you can't look at with a title like that.
Well, we take a look at anything that impacts revenue or expenses in the state of Montana or the economy. And so it's the emerging issues along with the big three, right? The education areas, the health and human services, the public safety correction area, and emerging issues like obviously workforce shortage, affordable housing shortages. And we try to search out what potentially could be the best of practices. You know, is there a case for change? And where, when we try to look at the areas that have effectively addressed these problems and what did they do?
Part of this is transitory nature of housing to a certain degree. Montana has been hit with what they call COVID refugees. A lot of folks coming in, even buying property sight unseen. That has decreased the supply, increased the demand. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell recently said that perhaps it's time to stop using the word transitory when it comes to our national inflation. How long do we use the term transitory when it comes to looking at what is affecting our housing market?
Well, we actually were beginning to experience problems pre-COVID, in particular in markets like the Gallatin. And so, in the rural areas, not so much pre-COVID, but in a lot of the urban areas, it was already hitting. And then the question is, once folks come here in pursuit of the Montana freedoms or the Montana way of life, are they going to stay? Right now, we do have a significant shortfall of the more affordable, the starter homes. And we are going to have to at least hold the conversation. Now, do we want to overreact? No. Just like sometimes government regulations or government interactions can create a problem, we can also, in an attempt to solve it, make it worse. I do believe we need to leverage some on the supply side. I would hope we would do so in a manner that encourages some more reasonable zoning that allows the build out of some of these houses. You know, maybe change some of the incentive packages that encourages an affordable housing build out. I would hope we're smart enough not to pour money down the demand side, because if you do rent subsidies, what you do is actually make the problem worse.
And that's what I have concerns about as well. You do have, I mean, it's complexity of issues, but mostly it's supply and demand. But, you know, it affects the labor market, obviously homelessness and public services. It's going to affect consumerism overall. I think you look at what can we do to raise income. Interest rates are an issue as well, because people are buying a payment versus buying an overall home package that they can afford, looking at the actual value of the home. Subsidies, why don't you kind of give us a view of what are good and what are perhaps bad? Because there have been some out there, I think, that have tried that don't work, but others seem to.
Right. Well, you always have to stay on the right side of the equation, correct? And so if you pour money down the demand side, then you actually increase the amount people pay for an already short product. Mm. You're better off focusing on what's limiting supply, right? And demand might correct itself if the COVID is somewhat transitory, but why is that supply of that house limited? Why even pre this couldn't you get an affordable house in Bozeman? There are growing cities such as Houston, Texas, or for that matter, even Tokyo, Japan, that have kept some relatively more affordable rents by focusing on the supply side of the equation, by removing those barriers to build. Now, that doesn't come without consequence either, because obviously folks in your local community, your neighborhoods, may indeed not prefer to have duplexes on their block. You know, but again, the not in my backyard effect that always occurs once we have our house makes it more difficult for the next guy that's just trying to get a house to get one. My argument is focus on the supply side. Currently what we could do, because we haven't been able to work with zoning, we're just beginning to look into that, is that we have done some gap financing on the supply side. To the builders of affordable housing, we've put some money towards gap financing to try to encourage quicker and more build out in that area. But we're finding there's somewhat of a limited spot to build these houses. They've been zoned out of a lot of areas.
That's interesting. I know the legislature tried to address that supply side in this past session. Is it too early to tell if that is having the good effect?
Well, the money we've invested in actually gap financing, there is some additional affordable housing being built, some significant units, but not enough to deal with the overall problem we're facing. We're going to have to work at getting a fourplex is profitable for a developer to build. A single family $200,000 house is not. We're going to have to make it so that the actual building industry itself is interested in building these type rentals. And again, the most affordable things to build are the duplexes, threeplexes, and fourplexes, or to allow some of the new, and I'm not talking the old mobile home, a list of higher quality manufactured homes that basically can be sat on a lot and are relatively indistinguishable from a stick-built home.
Interesting comment here from the text line at 781-627-5483 for Representative Lou Jones. So what happens when all the COVID refugees realize that they need to find meaningful employment? Then what? I don't know that equation equals, because I think the people that are coming in here are coming in with online jobs.
Yeah, we don't see an unemployment problem in the state, right? We see like 3.2% unemployment. If you want a job in Montana, you can have it. But a lot of the folks that are coming in are retired. We see a lot of them are older, and a lot of them are bringing their job with them, right? They're telecommuting back to work. So the winter may bother them if we actually have a hard winter, but I think employment, they've kind of gotten down.
I sort of laugh at that because I think that's going to have a real effect. I wanted to talk a little bit about let's just look at the overall picture here. When we look at raising our income, more prosperity in Montana, obviously as a man who's vice chair and now most recently chair of the appropriations subcommittee, can you look back at this last session and give us an overview now that we probably have pretty good assurances on what our potential revenue is going to be, more thoughtful examination of how we did on the budget?
Montana had a good legislative session, right? We forecasted what we knew at that time, forecasted revenue forward and expense forward, and did as good as we could do at that date. What we've seen since then, of course, is the endless money coming in has actually enhanced the revenue side substantially. We're bringing in particular, capital gains. Some tax behavior there is people cash out money in front of what could be a potential federal tax increase. But the state's putting on revenue rapidly. The challenge, the story yet to be told, is the state's not immune to inflation pressure. Mm-hmm. We're having to adjust our nurses, an example. Nurses in the nursing homes, I believe it was a Columbia Falls one, in order to keep our nursing staff on, took a 20% increase to keep some nursing staff on. Prison workers. So the state's also experiencing an expense pressure linked to the inflation that's on the ground, in particular in wages, but also in fuel. The state car snowplows burn fuel, right? At construction. So while we're certainly seeing very favorable revenues and people are talking about potential ending funds, I would one caution them that where state experiences and expense pressures just like an individual does. It burns fuel and it hires workers. Our snowplow drivers have to be paid, and tires have to be put on the snowplow. So we've got to look at the gap there. And then I have some concerns that, one, how transitory is inflation? It seems to be continuing to me. And two is some of this revenue is blip-related. It's related to all this stimulus money just pouring in. This enhanced revenue stream is unlikely to continue at this rate of increase for an extended period of time. Maybe it'll make another year, but we need to be careful that we start assuming this sort of an ongoing revenue stream in capital gains and tax is ongoing. I think a lot of it's OTO. It's just a blip.
And I would agree to it. I like the comment. We need to be careful. Are we being careful?
Well, right now, I believe we are. I mean, I mm-hmm. certainly weigh in on that constantly. I talk to the budget director regularly. I know the new budget director is very concerned with the expense escalations that the message we're both putting out is don't count all this extra revenue as money in the bank mm-hmm. because we're going to have to pay some bills that are going to be a little higher with inflation. Everything costs more today. To operate, to pay people to do. And I think when we get at the end of this, I would be surprised if we don't have coming into the next session some extra revenue on. I don't think we'll be able to consider it ongoing. And I do believe a whole lot of what people perceive to be there now, like, oh, we could have $1 billion extra, will be consumed by an increase on the expense side.
How messy do taxes get in the future with this current administration and with Montana looking at, various levels of unbalance when it comes to our tax structure?
Well, Montana's tax structure, you know, the property tax has 14 classes in it. That makes it one of the most complex in the country. You change one property tax and the other compensates. It shifts around. And income tax, it's our challenge. Messy is an interesting word. I would say variable. The income tax is incredibly variable to the extent that they're the pass-through and the companies in it, because companies' incomes go up and down rapidly. And so we struggle to have accurate forecasts forward over a two-year period. The next little recession can just kick your teeth in, right? So your revenue stream bounces hard. Your expense stream tends to be somewhat more static. You don't get to change wages daily or not put tires on your snowplow. So we have to always be careful to keep on some decent reserve. We're reserved up well now, right? We're well reserved now. We're prepared. You know, probably 45 other states would like to be us in fiscal preparedness. We're employed. We're reserved. We're struggling with issues. Workforce training, but our question there is more of who the heck do we train versus can we train, right? I mean, we have 3.2% employment. Who is this big training pool we're going to find? You know, and of course, worker shortages. But we've got good problems. We've got problems where employment demand exceeds the number of employees. Now, if we don't answer this, we're going to have companies leave the state. People won't stay here forever waiting for employees. So we have to answer the question of where do these employees come from? How do we maybe work on the childcare side, get some mothers back to work? What do we do to answer it? If we don't answer it, companies are going to locate where their employees are at. But at least in the near term, the 45 other states or so would like to be us.
That's great perspective, Representative. Thank you for that. And thank you for sharing your time with us here. And of course, sharing all that great experience and knowledge with the people of Montana State Legislature. We'll chat with you down the road, obviously, okay? And you know, if I don't, before Christmas, Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Thank you, my friend. Merry Christmas to you and to the listeners out there.
Yep, Representative Lou Jones, again, back.